Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. I'm Ben Helicopter Coops.
Ben Helicopter Coops.
Yeah. Just something I was talking about. Anyway. Hey, you're listening to Live from the Path. Here's what we got going on the show tonight. Why is everybody looking at me?
That's just random stuff happening. Attractive.
Okay. All right. So here's what's happening. Dan, what's trending with Dan? Hit me. What's going? What's on the docket tonight?
There'll be three things. One is a graham cracker company made a controversial ad, got people all up in arms. We have a dog viral video that people are all crazed about. 400,000 hits in like 24 hours.
Okay.
And we have Blood Moon.
I saw a couple things on Facebook about the Blood Moon.
It's trending.
I chuckled.
It's happening tonight. I chuckled
to myself.
Tonight.
Okay, so, and the premise of what's trending with Dan, he's going to give us the gist of these stories, and we have to figure out the appropriate reaction, according to Dan.
That's appropriate.
As dictated by Dan.
Three options dictated by Dan.
Most what I come up with is appropriate.
Absolutely. Okay. Also, so I found myself earlier this week, it would have been last week, I guess, in reading between what seemed to be some sort of online tussle between two guys that love Jesus. And the headline for one was, just because you're a Christian doesn't mean you have to be a, let's say, jerk, for a matter of practical speaking, okay? It was more offensive than that. So that was article number one from a Jesus man. Second Jesus article was, Jesus wasn't worried about being nice to everybody. You can stop worrying about being nice to everybody as well.
Yeah.
All right. So then, these two guys seem to be in some sort of tiff, and I thought, well, we can jump in on that.
Oh, absolutely.
That seems like something.
That's right where we belong.
An unnecessary argument between Christians. Let's get involved in that.
Yeah, we're going to sort right through it.
So anyway, I'll read through the premise of these articles, and one guy actually referenced the other dude, like legitimately to say, this guy even said this. And I think it asked the broad question. How are we supposed to interact with the culture?
How do we act?
Yeah.
How do we act in general? How do we behave ourselves?
Because, I want to be the mean guy.
Okay, here's the deal, right? Because you see the lovey-dovey guy who just floats around the world hoping that the Holy Spirit drives someone past him so we can grab him and yell Jesus and kiss him on the cheek. And then you got the other guy on a soapbox screaming at people with a megaphone. Obviously, we don't have this thing nailed down yet.
No.
As far as Jesus seemed to strike a chord, we stink at it. And so the question is, can we look at these two arguments these guys are making and say, all right, what are we supposed to take from this? Is there a brass tacks on how we're actually supposed to deal with folks? Traditionally, we're just not very good at it.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll talk through some of that. We got some potentially some Pope-style advice. We also got some Dear Life from the Path, and we should be able to handle all that within the short amount of time that we have with you this week. Before we get started, I wanted to give you a quick shout-out to our sponsors, Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower Team. Now may or may not be the season to buy a house. Ask Bob. If you go to EisenhowerTeam.com, he'll help you out. There's I saw a house he had for sale over on the east side. Looked like a bargain. I didn't look in it or
Here's
anything.
The thing. If you're going to sell your place, the springtime's the way to do it because the grass is going to look fantastic. And if you let this drag on into, say, summertime and you start picking up the brown patches, your place isn't going to look near as good.
We bought our first house in the spring. All the flowers were blooming. We walked. It was just this beautiful place. By the time we moved in, it was like, boy, we sure did something bad to these flowers.
Yep.
Never did look as good again, but nope. Boy, sure looked good. It is the time to buy a house.
Looks like a gopher colony moved in and took the place over.
It's like, bummer.
All right, so if you want to be, sounds like confused into purchasing a house, springtime is the way to go. and don't listen to us. Use the discernment of Bob Eisenhower. Go to the Eisenhower team. EisenhowerTeam.com. Also, Westfield Veterinary Hospital, WestfieldVetHospital.com. You can sign up for an appointment online. You can get your dog, cat, bird, horse, whatever they do in there.
You know, I wonder if they pre-screen those, if they're just like, hey, we got this coming in, and they just put it on the calendar. Like if I was like, Thursday I got a gorilla dental. You know, you think they'd call back and say, hey, how big a gorilla are we talking? You know, you think they screen it beforehand, or they just throw it right on the calendar and we'll take whatever comes in?
If I were them, and I'm not. But if I were them, I wouldn't ask because I wouldn't want them thinking that maybe I don't know how to handle a gorilla. Because if I called back and said, hey, so how big is this gorilla? It makes me think, well, don't you deal with gorillas?
Yeah, you don't have a table big enough for gorillas? I'm out of here. I'm going somewhere else.
I mean, because I could be wrong, but gorillas sound like they're big money.
No, it's a matter of pride. You got to let them just bring in whatever they want.
I think I charge like big money for gorillas.
Yeah, three-headed husky, three-legged giraffe, same. Bring them in Tuesday at 4.
I don't need any more information, just that they need help. I'm here.
Yeah, that's how they do it at Westfield Veterinary Hospital.
This is the greatest advertisement I've ever seen in my entire life.
Bring your gorilla.
Yeah.
WestfieldVetHospital.com.
Incidentally, we do have openings for advertisers on the show. In case you're interested, get a hold of us at info@lifefromthepath.org.
If you dare.
Shameless plug.
I don't know how it is that we shuffle through them so fast. But
all right, Dan. Dan, what's trending in the world? We need to know about it.
Yes. Number one, a graham cracker company crosses the line. A graham cracker company ran an ad last month celebrating the wholesale of their product by presenting families doing wholesome family things. Their ad drew a lot of controversy because it showed a gay couple lovingly taking care of their small child. People on one side of the issue insisted on the inclusion of a gay couple cross the line and is proof that the company is anything but wholesome. People on the other side are complaining that anyone who has a problem with the ad is homophobic. In response, the company printed off copies of all the negative feedback they received. They hired a couple artists and said, here, do something with this. And they created this big sculpture thing that said the word love on it. Kind of like, yeah, see, you guys are bad and we're good. Okay, so here's the question. Is it homophobic to be upset with a company portraying the homosexual lifestyle as wholesome? A, it's a pretty black and white one. A, yes, it is homophobic. Leave the poor guys alone. They didn't do anything to you. B, no, it's not homophobic. This has nothing to do with two actors playing a role for an ad. It has to do with a company pushing their own morality on the public. Or C, what does it matter? I don't like graham crackers anyway.
All right, Boovy, you're in first.
Bummer.
We always got to do that. Hey, can you read B again, please?
Oh, man, they're kind of long, aren't they? No, it's not homophobic. This has nothing to do with two actors playing a role for an ad. It has to do with a company pushing their own morality, on the public.
And then, I'm sorry, can you read A again? That
yes, it is homophobic.
Jeez, Boova. Seriously, the there's only three questions here.
They didn't do anything to you. Stop being so mean.
All right. I'm interested to see what I hear from this, but I'm going to say A.
A, it is homophobic. Leave the poor guys alone. They didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Mike.
I'm going with B. It's not homophobic, and they are obviously pushing an agenda. Although, just to throw my two cents worth in here, like I've done the research, right? Like the population of which that 2 second snippet that you showed appeals to is very, very small, right? There's people running. I'm just talking from a business perspective. I'm not talking from a Christian, non-Christian.
Forget the issue, or...
Like whatever. Like it just seems odd to cause yourself the trouble, unless it's free advertising. Maybe that's
the deal. I specifically did not mention the brand name because they want to get a lot of airplay out of it.
And maybe that's the goal. That seems like a weird way to do business. Like, I don't know that I would be interested in doing business that way. But apart from what I feel about that issue, yay or nay, it's obviously didn't need to be done. The amount of population that is not in a homosexual lifestyle is, I mean, way outnumbers the ones that are. You're specifically pushing a button for free advertising, which I find to be cheeky.
They're not going
to
be selling a whole lot more graham crackers because they're going after the gay.
That's what I'm saying. It's not like you look population. at your advertising numbers and go, you know, there's just not enough homosexuals buying crackers. We're going to have to do something. You know, like and like I said, how I feel about the issue either way is not the point. It's more of a business move that I just find odd. I'm going with B. It was done on purpose. Just to push some buttons and cause trouble.
Okay, Dane?
I totally agree with Mike on B. Graham crackers, do you associate that with homophobia or just you trying to make some money? You know, it's definitely a way to try to get themselves out in the open, whether it was a good move or bad move, just trying to make some money.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go with B. I reject the second half of your premise, but otherwise I'm sticking with B. The company, they don't have moral agency. They're not a moral item. I don't ever look at someone at an advertisement and say they're pushing the morality on me. It's just a product. It's not a realm of influence, and so I reject that half of it, but otherwise we'll go with
it. I'd say they're adding that influence though. I mean, there is no reason to add that unless they're trying to make a point.
No. They don't. Who gives moral agency to an advertising company? You have to give that.
Exactly.
I have to say, I accept your ability to influence morality, and I reject it. I simply say, you do not have that ability to do so. And so, If I do that, then it's just an advertising ploy.
You're
going to
lose points if you keep arguing with Dan.
I'm sorry. I'm going with half B. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay, here's the points on this because, you just went to a negative three for Ben. Come on. I'm going to give Boova one because we beat you up so bad last week. And
you got a sympathy point. That's manly.
Dan and Mike have 3 points on that one.
Rock on.
All right. That's the graham crackers. This one's a little tamer. All right. Dog video goes viral. A dude stumbled upon his mom's dachshund, like a wiener dog thing, who had somehow gotten stuck in the sleeve of a coat. So it's on the floor, and you can't see the dog at all. So the dog is in the sleeve of the coat, and it's lying on the floor. So the guy rings the doorbell. The dog starts barking, and the sleeve's jumping up and down, and okay. It's barking, and looked kind of goofy. He made a 22-second video clip of it, put it on YouTube like yesterday, and today it has 407,000 views. It just went crazy on a 22-second video of a sleeve barking, jumping up and down.
Uh-huh.
Okay, what's your response to a dog video having 400,000 views in a few hours? A, with all the world problems that need solved, it's a sad to think that so many people are spending so much time doing mindless activities like watching YouTube. B, there's nothing wrong with a cute dog video. Have a little fun already. Or C, the apocalypse is upon us.
Okay. Mike, you're up first.
Give me 2 seconds to run a number.
John Boova.
B.
Boova's in with B. What was B again, Dan?
There's nothing wrong with a cute dog video. Have a little fun already.
No one was doing anything yesterday watching this dog bark, the sleeve bark like a dog. And that's all right with you?
Okay, so here's my quick number crunch. I just wanted to check this out. So there was a total of 149,233 minutes devoted to watching that video.
I watched it 3 times myself. I don't get it. It's a sleeve jumping up and down, barking.
Hold on. Let me get you the number of days. Okay, the total is 103 days have been donated worth of, 24 hours a day. 103 total 24-hour days have been devoted to watching that video. Since its inception.
It's the entire working year of a city street worker.
Or France. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Couldn't we be doing something, feeding the homeless? I don't know.
If you break it down to each individual at 22 seconds, you do it in passing while you're clicking the square button on your phone and it's starting to minimize and the video's playing. That's fine.
Yeah.
But people like Dan who watch it 3 times straight, which one is
it's
the
option? Research.
Yeah. I think I was going with whatever option was. It's not that big of a deal. It's just 22 seconds.
Okay. Dan?
That's a B.
I'm going to go with B because I get subscriptions through different YouTube channels. And what if someone was having a really bad day and that video just happened to pop up as something that was hot that day and just made someone really appreciate?
Couldn't you say the same thing for heroin, Dane? Like,
it's all about perception.
I'm having a rough day. A little H just took me right up.
But a dog, God's creature, just having fun in his day. He didn't know. So I'm going with B.
The Garden of Eden says nothing about a puffy sleeve coat. I'm just saying. We're in agreement, but maybe not totally.
Here's the deal. I'm actually going strongly in B because the reason we argue about this is because it's on the computer. If you were sitting in your house and there was a dog in a sleeve barking outside the window, you would say, "Hey, man, check that out!" And you would go to the window and watch it, and no one would think anything of
it.
And
you might video it.
Yeah,
yeah, but back in the day, let's move this back, say 1,500 years ago. Back in the day, it just took out you and the other 10 guys in your village. Like it's literally stopping the world from doing 103 days worth of work. That's why it's on the. That's why it's a big deal. If it's on the computer because the amount of I'm not doing anything has spread to the nation.
Now here's the deal. That watching that dog video is a symptom of someone who wasn't doing work already. It didn't cause someone to stop doing work. There's not a guy up running wire on a telephone pole who came down to check out the video.
Hey,
right?
Man, you gotta check out his dog and his coat.
Yeah, he wasn't doing anything anyway. So, you can't blame it's a symptom of people not working. It didn't cause it. I would watch it if it was outside my window. I just happened to plug my window in, and it pulls up on YouTube. I'm all for it.
No. That was terribly an overstatement based on no facts that you have.
Strong B.
Telephone man won't come down to check it out.
Well, I'm somewhere between A and B. A little bit silly. It's kind of ridiculous. Really, 400,000 hits, but I'll give you each point for
three
the
of them were you, Dan.
Well, except I'm taking 2 points away from Mike for trying to sell heroin.
I'm just saying.
On an innocent dog video.
It's apples to apples.
It's a cute puppy. Leave him alone. Okay, this is the big one.
Okay.
All right. Happening tonight, Blood Moon, and the end of the world, all right? Between tonight, September 5th, and September 15th, excuse me, between tonight and September 2015, there'll be four lunar eclipses, which is the first time in over 300 years we've had that many in such a short amount of time. During a total lunar eclipse, the moon's entirely immersed in the Earth's shadow and makes this dusky blood red color. I heard one guy say it's kind of like the entire globe is having a sunset all at the same time. That's why, and then it's kind of reflected on the moon. That's why it looks blood.
He better be at least 300 years old, otherwise he's not credible.
How does he know? Anyway, well, they've had them just having four in such a short amount of time.
Right, I'm sorry.
Anyway, they're called blood moons because they're red. So here's the deal. The prophet Joel, quoted in Acts chapter 2, says, "The sun shall be turned to darkness, the moon to blood, before the day the Lord comes, the great and magnificent day." Revelation 6 talks about this as well. "When he opened the sixth seal, look, behold, there was a great earthquake. The sun became black as sackcloth. The full moon became like blood. The stars fell from the sky, the fig trees." All these things happen. Everybody's running for their life. That's the end of the world. Here's the question. Some people think the four blood moons are a sign of the end of the world. What do you think? A, there is no doubt in my mind this is a sign from God. We'd better get ready for Christ's return. B, this is an eclipse. There is nothing to see here. C, we don't need a sign. Jesus said he's coming back when we least expect it. Our job is to be ready as if it could be any minute.
John Buva.
C.
John Buva's in with C, with no commentary.
Yeah, no, it's not up for us to interpret signs. It's not for us to find the end of times and then start preparing. We should have been preparing the entire time.
What do you do with the scripture Dan quoted? It's got a little Joel, a little Acts, a little Revelation. You just throw out the Lord's word, whatever you wish?
No, I don't throw out Lord of the Word.
You are incendiary. Why are you trying to explode Buva?
I don't like his flippant C answer with no backing.
No, agreed.
Yeah, no, that's it. The signs in Revelation, that's I don't know a lot about it, but it seems to me, in my opinion, that it's highly metaphorical, and it's not for us to look for specific signs, and it's not for us to look for the end of days. It's said that Jesus doesn't even himself. He calls himself out saying that I don't even know the end of days. Only the Father knows that. I don't know why anyone is even preoccupied with trying to find signs. It's told multiple times. That's not your goal. That's not your job. Your job is to at all times be preparing and at all times be ready for Jesus to come back. It's not about, hey, that happened, now let's start. It's about, we should have been doing this the entire time.
All right, Mike. I mean, as long as I'm watching this blood moon leaning against a live fig tree and the stars are still up, I don't even know why you're having, I mean, just based on the verses that you read, if the stars have not fallen and the sun is still a burning, who cares? You know what I'm saying? It seems like there's four qualifications need to happen there. I'm with C. You best be ready.
Dane?
I totally agree with C all the way, you know?
All right. Everybody's in with C?
I don't think Dan left us much choice there.
Yeah, the wording of C makes it difficult to argue with.
Well, it could be B. You know, hey, it's just an eclipse. Yeah, but C, really, that's the thing.
What can I say?
Yeah, that's like all the other answers. The answer C is love Jesus with all your heart because it's the right thing to do. Oh, crap.
Or you're a loser.
Well, Jesus does make it very clear. We're just to be ready, and it could be at any moment. We just don't know when. It's going to be like a thief in the night. You know, you can wait. If you sit around and wait for all of these signs to happen, then you have time. And there's no urgency because, yeah, I'm still waiting for the sun to go black. I'm still waiting for the stars to fall from the sky. I'm still waiting for that fourth blood moon or whatever. And Jesus is like, no, if you're not ready now, it could be now.
Now, don't you think that, like, your spidey sense should start tingling, like, third thing in? You know what I'm saying? It's like when I'm going home and it's my birthday, right? And I start to get the sniffins that there might be a surprise party planned. You know, I'm like, the place is really clean for some reason. And no one's really answering their phone. Or, you know, as soon as the phone rings, the wife kind of goes off to the side. You know, the girls are dressed pretty uptown. I start to think, wait a minute. You know, third one in, I'm like, what's going on here? Now, just one of those on its own, like the house is spick and span. Maybe they just cleaned the place that day. I come home, the girls are dressed fancy. Maybe they just were playing princess. But, like, I don't know that I would take blood red moon and go, the Lord is returning. I would go blood red moon, stars falling, fig tree at my place dies. Wait a minute.
Right. I mean, if you,
something's funny.
And if you look at the way the scripture reads, if the blood red moon, the presence of, was the trigger, we've obviously had blood red moons before.
Right, right.
Obviously, it's an ineffective trigger. It doesn't point to four within the scripture. And so, like, you really can't call it with any profundity to say, hey, man, four blood red moons is definitely in.
No, you could join the ranks of history that were sitting around 300 years ago, the same guy.
wasting his time.
They said that, and this is off a Revelation interpretation, but they thought there was like a 1,000-year wait, right? Jesus leaves, and it's going to be 1,000 years. And so at 999 A.D., the people are like freaking out, right? Because they think the end of the world's coming. It's going to hit the 1,000. And right before the new year, there's like a two-headed goat born. And it threw everything up. Everything to a tizzy. They're like, that's the sign. 1,000 years and a two-headed goat. People going crazy nuts.
That's right. Where's
this
that revelation?
This has got to be it.
It doesn't matter. A two-headed goat is not right.
Yeah. We really got him this time. Yeah. That's the goat arguing. Never mind. So anyway. Yeah, that's – yeah. I'm a booba. Highly symbolic. Yeah.
Just be ready. Just be ready right now.
Just be
now.
Ready.
It could be any moment.
Did someone just agree with me?
You said metaphor. I changed it symbolic and then agreed with
it's
you.
It's easier to agree with you when you give explanation for your answers.
All right.
Absolutely.
I agreed with the shadow of you. All right. So wait, hand out the points, Dan. We're ready. We're ready for bigger rewards.
I actually really did add them up this time. We got Ben in last place with 2 because
that's ridiculous.
You had a -3. That kind of really ruined you. Mike came in next with 5. Buva 6. You did pretty good this week. And Dane got 8. How'd that happen? I'm just soft on the guest.
Hey, Dane agreed with everything I said. Was it my follow-up explanation? You started.
It was your heroin.
Oh, seriously, that's not
that, that ruined you.
You got to talk the way people understand, Dan. Just because you sit at your place watching Leave It to Beaver doesn't mean the rest of the world can get
learn
in on
my
what's
language.
Happening. Hey, my 3 sons is on.
All right, you're listening live from the path. That was What's Trending with Dan. Now you're up to date. You know what's going on in the world.
Yeah. Red Moon.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't fear the Reaper. Don't watch the graham cracker commercials. And check out the dog on the YouTube.
Yeah, it's fine.
All right, there you go. All right, so here's the setup for what I was reading this week. So article number 1 was how to be a Christian without being a total, I think it's jerk, but it's got the special characters in it to imply profanity. So I'm not sure what the profanity is. But how to be a Christian without being
a profanity. Are you trying to get us to weigh in or what? Like, I mean, do you want us to give guesses or
you want us
to move on?
No, I'm just throwing it out. Okay, so that's number 1. Then there was a second article about Jesus didn't care about being nice or tolerant, which both these guys seem to represent two sides of a coin as if they're in a battle. And so, as a matter of fact, the how to be a Christian without being a jerk about it, he even references the nice guy and says, somebody even said this. So I'm going to read you his premise and then a couple of his points. I'll read you the premise of the other guy, and I kind of want to talk about that. Basically, obviously these guys are disagreeing. How are we supposed to deal with people when it comes to talking to them about Jesus and interacting with the culture?
Agreed.
So here we go. This is the how to be a Christian without being a jerk. Opening salvo. Let's be honest, full colon. Christianity in America has an image crisis, and justifiably so. Somehow the most beautiful story ever told got diluted into a hybrid of culture and religion that people are finding less than appealing. Not for a lack of good narrative. Even some of my atheist friends have privately conceded that as far as narratives go, we've got the better story. Instead, people rejecting Christianity not simply or entirely because they don't believe it, but because too many of us are just plain old jerks about it. Meanwhile, we have people like Matt Walsh arguing that Jesus didn't care about being nice, and that neither should we. What a shame. Evangelical Christianity isn't a tailspin, and it's not a problem with the message, but the messengers. The last thing, Buva, the last thing we want to do is encourage people to be more of a you-know-what about being a Christian. I can only imagine that if God's justice is exceedingly fine, which I believe it is, we're going to have some answering to do for the people who walk away, not because they're rejecting Jesus, but because they're understandably rejecting us. And so he's got a list of 10. How can we be Christian without being told jerks about it? Here's a head start. 1, maybe we should reconsider the confrontational bumper stickers on our cars. 2, let's try holding beliefs with confidence, but also with humility. 3, learn to disagree with dignity. 4, stop saying farewell to Christians we disagree with. 5, let's not withhold money from poor kids because the person giving to them might potentially be gay. 6, maybe we should try to love people into the kingdom instead of trying to bully them into it. 7, realize that if your co-workers liked your preaching, they'd hire you to work at their church. 8, stop pretending that one political party has a monopoly on Jesusness. 9, start helping the oppressed instead of acting like you're oppressed. 10, learn to be a servant. He's got some commentary on those, but that's the gist of his discussion, okay? Stop being a jerk. This is from the Matt Walsh blog. He's the other side, and he says, Jesus didn't care about being nice or tolerant. And he says, there is no shortage of heresies these days. If you want to adopt some blasphemous, perverted, funhouse mirror reflection of Christianity, you will find a veritable buffet of options. And of all the heretical choices, probably the most common and possibly the most damaging is what I've come to call the nice doctrine. The propagators of the nice doctrine can be seen and heard from any time any Christian takes any bold stance on any cultural issue or uses harsh language of any kind or condemns any sinful act or fights against evil with any force or conviction at all. As soon as he or she stands and says, this is wrong, and I will not compromise, the heretics swoop in with their trusty mantras. They insist that Jesus was a nice man, and that he never would have done anything to upset people. They say that he came down from heaven to preach tolerance and acceptance, and he wouldn't have used words that might lead to hurt feelings. They confidently sermonize about a meek and mild Messiah who was born into this earthly realm on a mission to spark a constructive dialogue. Really? Jesus Christ preached a truth no deeper or more complex than a slogan on a poster in a kindergarten classroom? A provocative claim to say the least. I decided to investigate the matter, and sure enough, I found this excerpt from the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus said, "We're best friends like friends should be. With a great big hug and a kiss from me to you, won't you say you love me too?" Actually, wait, sorry, that's from the original Barney theme song. I don't recognize this Jesus, this moderate, this pacifist, this nice guy. He's not Jesus I read about in the Bible. Forgiving, of course, loving, always loving, but not particularly nice. He condemned, he denounced, he caused trouble, he disrupted the established order. On one occasion, or at least one recorded occasion, he used violence. This Jesus saw the money changers in the temple, and how did he respond? He wasn't polite about it. I'd even say he was downright intolerant. He fashioned a whip. That's my favorite part of that story, by the way. He didn't just like pick up a whip. He made one.
Yeah. It would have been better if he'd have bought the whip from one of the guys and then used it to run him out. I thought that would be have some more irony to it. But the fact that he made the whip is cool as well. Continue.
So he fashioned a whip, physically drove the merchants away, turned over tables and shouted, "He caused a scene," from John 25. Okay. So, I mean, he's got a lot more talks about that. So we seem to be on two polar opposites here, right? Stop standing. Is the first guy saying don't stand firm, be nice, and then you'll have the opportunity to say what you want to say? The other guy saying hold firm on truth. These niceties are getting in the way of your ability to actually practically spread truth.
I think they're both true.
I gotta say I'm with both of them, except I'm more toward the first one.
Really? The more nice guy?
No, I mean with what he said. I liked his 10 things.
Hold on. Some of his 10 things are the things that actually drove me away from that man's opinion. What was the number two?
Let's try holding beliefs with confidence, but also with humility.
Read his explanation.
Okay.
I didn't read the explanation.
Everyone
first.
Who holds an opinion thinks they're right. That's kind of how opinions work. People aren't turned off that we believe in certain propositions to be true. They're turned off because we're arrogant about it. Yes, let us hold our beliefs with confidence, but also with humility that says, but I could be wrong.
Oh, yeah, that's not humility, that's just...
That's foolishness and a lie.
I am right, but let me humbly tell you how.
here's the thing, I think the one thing that I tend to disagree with nice man is first of all, when people talk about being nice, their general definition is agreeable. You know what I'm saying? Like, where he's agreed to be with me. And like, and we talk about this a lot when it comes to when people talk about tolerance. Like, his biggest thing is probably in the realm of tolerance, right?
Yeah.
And what we're talking about is people try like to use those words interchangeably, like that guy hates me and instead he's just not tolerant of your behavior. And the reason why is because I love you enough to tell you that God's not tolerant of your behavior. It's not them, it's not me they're rejecting. They're rejecting God. And he said the other way. In his opening paragraph, he was like that we'll have something to answer for, because it's not that they were rejecting Christ, they were rejecting his people. That's kind of not how the Bible spells it out. Now, I suppose it matters what type of God's love you're describing, but Christ says, speak boldly, because it's not you that they're hating. They're hating me. They hated me first. And so the reasons, when you try to explain the gospel to somebody and they don't want anything to do with it, Jesus says, basically, don't take that personally. They're rejecting me, not you. And that's the difference. And like some of the things, it's not like I'm against presenting the gospel in a way that shows it in a loving manner, but that doesn't cross the boundary into being tolerant of you being on the opposite side of God, right? Because if I was okay with you and God not being together, being apart, I wouldn't even be talking to you about him. You know what I'm saying? If I was okay that you didn't have a relationship with Christ and I didn't love you enough to say, listen, the way that you're living your life, not the particular sins, not the individual sins, not the things that I don't do that you do, that's stupid, that is judgmental, and the Bible doesn't have much caveat for that, right? But the plain fact that your source of living is not coming from the Creator who made it, that's the problem, right? That's what I want to talk about.
Right, because ultimately, you're fighting for God's perspective to be clear, because God's purpose is restoration in your life, right? It's
That's
not
right.
Like, hey, man, I'm fighting, you're really making God mad. God put those things down to say, look, I'm trying to protect you. Here's the things that are going to cause you trouble in life. I say don't steal. It causes trouble. I say don't commit adultery. It causes trouble. I say love your neighbor. Be in a community. Listen, if you don't do those things, that's how you know, that's what causes trouble in your life. I seek your restoration with me. And that's what you're fighting for. It's not like you're fighting for, you know, you were offended dad. I'm going to tell on him.
That's right.
And the perspective, I think, I don't know, but I thought you looked like you were going to say something.
So I think I agree with everybody on the standpoint of I don't fully agree with either belief. I think that there are pieces of each individual portion that need to be combined together, and you need to find yourself in a standpoint in the middle. And I think that what I disagree with about the whole nice thing is I don't think we're called to be nice, and I don't think that nicety is the situation. I think that there's a difference between being nice to people, meaning I think he calls that as a definition. Part of it is affable, so being like and likable and things like that. I think that there's a difference between nice to people and being that likable character and honestly caring about them. So a nice guy walks up to the situation and says, yeah, you've got sin in your life, but that's okay. I do too. And that's it. Because he wants to be liked and he doesn't want to call someone out on that. The caring guy walks up to that person and says, hey, you've got sin in your life and that's not in any way okay. And because I care about you, I'm going to talk to you about why it's not okay to have in your life. Let's get it out. It's intolerance for the sin, but care for the person. And I think that's the biggest step that we need to be at is realizing that, yes, the sin is there. Yes, we are called to have no tolerance for sin. God has no tolerance for sin. There's no place where God will say, it's okay. He still loves the person with every bit of his being. That is his character, and that is his heart. But through loving that person, his intolerance is shown for the sin itself, not for the person. Through loving and caring on that person that both of them called out that God is a loving person or loving God, the care is the portion where, yes, you are intolerant against the sin. Yes, you are intolerant against the acts, but you're tolerant against the person.
Well, see, here's the thing is I think that's where we run into a lot of trouble and people get upset with tolerance. And maybe that is some of the PR on our front, and maybe it's some of where our hearts are. But, like, sin is nothing but an indicator of your broken relationship with Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't matter what sin you are that you're picking. It doesn't the amount of sin that you have. We tend to focus on that, right? Well, that particular sin, that's bad news, Bubba.
Right.
Yeah.
That's way bad, right?
Especially because you do it and I don't.
Right.
That's right.
We objectify big sins.
It has nothing to do with what particular sin you're using or what the quantity or quality of that sin is, right? It's an indicator that your life source is not coming from the Creator and your relationship with Jesus Christ is currently broken. That is what should be our concern. And so, and I have erred on the exact side that he's talking about. Because I will look at a man and I will say, look, you told me these things. These are all clear indications that you got problems. We need to work on fixing your addiction to pornography. We need to work on fixing your drinking problem. You know, and really, what I should have been doing is working on their relationship with Christ. I've missed that boat too. And the same goes with self assessment as well. I do that too, right? I look at myself and I go, I need to clean. There's ways that God wants me to act. And there's ways that I'm struggling with, and I'm not hitting them. And I've got to work on this to get this fixed. And the truth of the matter is, I have to let my relationship with Christ fix them. If it could be fixed on my own, I'd have done it. If it was easy, I'd have fixed it, right? Like, these are God-sized problems. And I'm not saying you can't, like, put down an addiction, you know, as a non-Christian. You can. They do it, right? But what I'm saying is like, the goal is to not get rid of sin. The goal is to be in relationship with the Father and let Jesus take that sin away. He pays for it, and then he takes it. That is what the Bible describes. And so I think most of the time when we look at PR nightmares, it's pointing out specific sin, calling them the problem or how much quantity of sin you have, and really we're missing the general overall problem that you just need God. That's the problem. You don't have God. That doesn't matter how you're not having him. It just matters that you don't.
Well, and both of these guys are trying to put Jesus in a corner and label him, saying there's nice Jesus and there's mean Jesus. And the reality is there's a time for both. You know, that there is a – and every time the examples that you stated that Jesus was mean or tough guy, it was always against the religious guys. It wasn't against the people that were all messed up with sin and their lives were all falling about. It was the religious leaders who were taking advantage of believers,
yeah.
You know, and Jesus just whooped on them. That's what the whip was for, was the temple people, right? And you look at how he handled, say, the woman at the well who was caught in sin and messed up. You know, he was firm go and sin no more, but he was also very loving. You know, he didn't judge her. He says, you know, oh, as a matter of fact, you've had, you know, 10 wives, you know, or 10 husbands.
And yeah, and actually one of the guy's points, and I can't remember which guy it was, it said, like, Jesus knew full well that she was not going to do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, he said, go and sin no more, knowing full well that before the end of her days, sin was going to creep back into her life. It was going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. But he still did it with a heart big enough to, you
repent,
know.
Repent, change.
Right, he asks everybody to do the same thing. And really, he's asking everybody to accept his gift. That's what he's asking. He's saying, look, drop the sin that you have, let me take it, and let's do life how I designed it, because I'm telling you, that's the way that the wheels stay greased and this thing runs smooth. This is how the glory comes to me and your joy gets to you. And when you say, I'm opting out of X and X part of what God has designed, you're really shooting yourself in the foot, and you're robbing the glory of God to him and to the people around you that could really benefit from that same system.
Yeah. Mike, I got to say that I completely agree with one of your previous comments, and I wanted to comment on it myself. I never really thought about the fact that sin is a byproduct. Sin is a symptom of a more overencompassing situation of not having that relationship with God. And I think that that's one of the biggest issues that we have is, you know, like you said, calling out the specific sin is it seems like from a societal standpoint, Christian society is we attack the sins. We attack, you know, homosexuality. We attack, all this different stuff, porn addiction, gambling. We attack these things, and we make it a big to-do about eliminating the sins rather than making it a big to-do about progressing the relationship with Christ. And I'd never thought about that, so I appreciate that point. That makes
you'll notice this a lot in political spaces. I was actually listening to a show on the way in, and they were talking about, you know, if this nation would just get back to a Christian nation, you know, this abortion issue wouldn't be the problem. And I'm like, you're missing it. If this nation would get back to a Christian nation, a heck of a lot of people would know Jesus. That's the goal. Like, I mean, they'd like to attach like their end game to the cause of Christ, and the cause of Christ is its own cause.
Yeah.
Like, if there's not only, let's, if you want to take that specific example, if those people who are currently pushing the big abortion campaigns, the win is that kids are being born and the person who was separated from God is not anymore. That's a win-win across the board. It's not just the one, hey, abortion goes away. I could give a rip about that as much as I care about God's glory being shown and people receiving his joy and forgiveness, right? And like, we always like to attach it one level up that, like, if people would submit to God, then X would happen. If people would submit to God, then people would be submitting to God.
They're treating the symptoms rather than
that's
the
right.
problem.
Like,
right?
The cause, right? The cause is that, yeah, we're separated from God.
And that comes back to a lot of what we've been talking about recently, where a lot of the problems we run to as people following Christ is we try to dictate the end. Here's how I'm going to do things. Here's where I want things to go. Here's what God wants me to do, as opposed to I get to live in the means. God gets to tell me how to live. I live that way. And then he takes care of the end. Whatever comes forth from me following him and doing what he's asked me to do as a citizen in his kingdom, it's going to be fine, because he's God and that's how it works.
And I'm telling you, like, and I've experienced times when I've been obedient to Christ and times when I haven't. And I promise you, there is joy in that. There is joy and freedom in that, knowing that you're trying to tune your life into the way that God has it to be lived. And there's some things that he's going to want. He's going to want some certain things out of your life, and he's going to add some things to your life. And like, both of those things you weren't comfortable with.
Yeah.
You're not comfortable with losing that sin that you've always lived with. And you're not comfortable adding this layer, like, to say, love on people. Like, you're not really comfortable in opening yourself up that way. But I promise you, there's so much peace and joy in there that you'll miss it when you turn your back on it.
Well, and so if you look, I was looking through this guy's list again, the guy to how to be a Christian without being a jerk. And if you look at some of the things he's upset about, they almost all point back to the problems that we're talking about. Is we're fighting for a cause as if Jesus was part of that cause.
Yeah, what was the number one thing? Bumper sticker. I'm on board with him. You got to drop that business. That's stupid.
Yeah. Stop picketing things. Yeah. Stop putting bumper stickers on. I'm not really a fan of the shirts.
No, I mean, neither.
Yeah, you putting not even the verse itself, just John 3:16 on your bumper does not win. I'm not saying God can't work through it, but I don't think it's really winning a lot of people over to Christ.
The guy, you know what the guy's going to do? He's going to pull behind you, look it up on his Google, and run into somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you've done.
You're thinking
it's
to
also
yourself,
a
yeah,
huge
if
assumption.
If I just put the verse, he's gonna look at that and think nothing of it. But
there's some
put,
pretty obnoxious bumper stickers,
yeah,
though.
Exactly.
Not just the John 3:16.
Right,
some
like,
are just embarrassing to think.
Dude,
really?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Jesus is my co-pilot. He should be driving.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
move over. I mean, you can at least do it right if you're going to print up a bumper sticker. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true. I'm at the helm. Jesus is helping me out.
Which way should I go, big man?
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get a car that has like the driving wheel on the other side and say, not show it to anybody. It say, Jesus is my pilot, and then not be sitting in the driver's side. And someone's just like, that guy's legit not driving right now.
You can pull a string and Jesus like puts his hand up.
Exactly.
You got to pee again? Like, unbelievable.
That's the classic mailman joke. They always have the wheel on the wrong side. But like, here was number seven. Realize that if your coworkers liked your preaching, they'd hire you to work at their church. Now, here's the deal. Maybe I don't understand this. Like, I work in corporate America, right? I don't run into these people. I don't run into a guy wandering the halls with his Bible out.
Right.
Handing out New Testament tracts and, like, trying to, like, I just don't run into guys like that. You know what I do run into is I do know some people who have a relationship with Christ, and they respond to questions honestly.
Yeah.
Like, for example, if someone is going through a rough time of work and they're talking to me about it, why wouldn't I tell them the truth? Hey, you know what I do? I lean on God. That's right. What I do. It would be dishonest if I were to make something else up and try to act like I don't do that. That's what I do. That's an honest relationship. That's what normal people do. Abnormal people, like, create circumstances and put on circuses.
The guy that
That's
walks
weird.
In the breakthrough and be like, you know who also took a break? Jesus. It's like, really? Like, you're going to be that guy? I'm sitting here eating a sandwich from the Wheel of Death next to me, and you're going to come over to be like, you know who also ate a sandwich? Jesus ate a sandwich in his day and age. How you doing? I'm Greg. Like, really? Like, really? Yeah. Was that your Jesus pickup line? Like, is that what just happened?
Hey, man.
Like, dude, you have no idea who I am.
Do you have
no idea how to approach me. It's not done through a Bible track. It's not done through a pamphlet that says Jesus' name a few times. That's not how it works.
Yeah, Bibles are free and available everywhere. I feel like there's no shortage of a guy who wants to know more.
Right, there's no dude that's just like, oh man, this free Bible is definitely going to be helping me out right now, that's sitting right here that this guy's shoving in my face. I didn't have any way to get a Bible beforehand, but now that he's giving me one, I can finally embrace the word of the Lord. It's like, no!
Actually, I think it's true that if you stand on any street corner in a major metropolitan area and you go, Gideon, 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 someone will bring you a Bible. There are teams of Gideons standing to deliver Bibles to people.
Like those guys.
Standing in the mirror, Gideon, Gideon, Gideon.
Like those black shadows on
a
Ghost.
Striped shirt.
You know what I'm saying? They come out of the sewers.
I partially agree with this statement just because I have had people like this in a work environment.
You're running into these guys?
I saw it one time, and it was enough to make me hope that it never happens again, because I had the dude come up to me and try and give me the whole Bible track thing while I'm in the smoke shack at work. I'm smoking a cigarette.
Sinning, obviously.
Sitting here. He's like, hey, you know, your body's a temple.
Hey,
like,
sinner.
Really, man? Did you just seriously pull that my body's a temple on me? Like, you don't even know my name. And you're going to come at me with that. Like, what's the next logical step in that standpoint? Yeah. Yes, my body is a temple.
Hey, friend.
What else you got?
So, I mean, like, that's the thing is sometimes people want to put themselves in positions like, well, Jesus said what he wanted to these people. They followed him.
Right.
He was out in, like, in weird spots. He was in major metropolitan areas until towards the end, right? Like, he was in, like, low, small towns, and they were going from town to town following him. When people follow you, you can say whatever you want, but it's not like he pounded on their door and said, hey, you know, get out here. By the way, here's how you should live.
Yeah.
It just, I mean, they gave him the choice. He gave him the choice, right? They had the choice to listen to what he had to say and leave.
I mean, even Zacchaeus, hey, dude, get out of the tree. I'm coming to your house.
I'm coming
today.
To your house now. Come on.
But he invited. I mean, he initiated it.
Yeah.
By following, going to see Jesus. So.
Here was the other one. Stop pretending that one political party has the monopoly on Jesus. Again, that's a trying to point
like
to the
which one that is.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
They both tried to use them.
Never mind.
It's. But here's the thing. It's like that's actually
Good
disappointed
move,
me quite a bit. Is like how much we fight. How much we fight for the identity of our country, like much, much harder than we fight for the perspective of God.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like we're using God to fight for something. And that's, we've got our priorities backwards. They're just backwards. You're never going to rescue something by trying to get God on your side. Focus on God first. And then, you know, whatever flows out of that, you're just going to have to deal with.
I was talking to Dave Herrick. Dave Herrick was on the show last week, a couple weeks ago.
That's right.
And I was talking to Dave Herrick this Sunday at church. And we got to talking about people who smell like Jesus, because we were talking about, I had been read through the Johns, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. And 1st John is a very convicting book of the Bible when you try to parse out your gray Christian lifestyle. Like, First John basically says, do you know how you know that you're living a righteous lifestyle? When you're righteous. Do you know when you do unrighteous things? You're not righteous. That's Bummer. The way it works. Like, do you know where the light is? Where the dark ain't. If you're walking in the dark, you're not light. Like, it's, I mean, it's really cut and dry, straightforward, right? And I was thinking to myself, and I was talking to Dave, and I said, you know, I feel like I want to know more people like that. I don't know that many people like that. And Dave Herrick goes, I like to call them people that smell like Jesus. They're not Jesus, but they've been standing next to him. And they just got that whiff about him. And you know what? I have not run into one track man or one guy at the gas station or one guy that passed out a pamphlet at a meeting of the minds that smelled like Jesus. None of them have ever smelled that way to me. Now, we've had people on this radio show that smell like Jesus. Yeah. They walk in here, and you just know. Like, there's been bands that we've had come in here, and, like, I love these people, and I haven't met them because they smell like Jesus. Like, you know what I'm saying? They've got the Holy Spirit in them, and it's obvious, and they're happy to be living in a joyful life in connection with God. And you look at them, and, you literally have to spend 2 minutes with them, and there's just a small amount of Jesus envy, and you're like, I don't know, you know, what they're doing in their relationship with Christ, but I want that, right? And maybe the point that those two fellas are making, and maybe Love Guy more aptly is that I want people to feel like that about Jesus because of me. Not for my own glory, but his, right? Frankly, if they feel like that because of me, that means I smell like Jesus. That means my life is going pretty great too. You know what I'm saying? Not without its ups and downs, not without its bit of sadness. But like, smelling like Jesus is probably the best that I'm going to get when living in this world, and I will take that. And I know that those folks that I've run into that are that way, they've encouraged me more without saying two words to me, without opening one Bible scripture, without saying one thing about how they got saved or what happened to them or what their baptism looked like. But just the way that they carried themselves and the joy that they had in their life, just by looking at them and listening to them talk for 1 minute, was enough for me to know that they live in connection with Christ and with the Holy Spirit at the center. And just, I mean, it's just convicting just to be around them.
Yeah.
And like, if that happens, both of those arguments go away, because the Holy Spirit does his own talking. You know what I'm saying? It does it with its life through you and with a life of works with faith that people just can't fight with. Right. And I think probably this kind of leaks into my Pope style advice a little bit. But like, what I see happening a lot, especially with arguments like these, is I like to call it it's a weird analogy, but I like to call it the God snowman. And what happens is like, the base of that snowman is the word that he provided to us, that everybody agrees on. Like, it's there, it's black and white. And then what we do is we take from that to the second level where we can extrapolate God's heart. Because he says this is probably God's heart on this matter. And where we tend to fight in is like, because God's heart is this, the head is what God thinks, and we fight up here, right? We all have share the same word. We say, because he lays out these certain laws or this way of living, his heart is this. Here's what God thinks then, because of that information. We always fight about the head. We're fighting about things that we think have to be true because of what we extrapolated to be God's heart, right? That's the most dangerous place to be. You are two parts of the body removed from the Bible, of God's you know, inspired word to us, of his written word to us, of his Holy Spirit inspired stuff, of his way to speak into our life. When you start getting two body parts away from that, that's where we fight. And that's exactly what he's talking about. How do you administer to people? Well, if God's heart is to be harsh with people so they know the reality of hell and love them so they know the body of Christ, what do we do now? And that's where we fight, is right up here at the head part. And it's almost futile.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, if I had to if I had to kind of look at these and try to decide what the appropriate reaction is how do you ultimately deal with people? What did Jesus say? He said, love God and love people. You know what I'm saying? And like, I think either end of this perspective simply treats some part of that shallowly. The guy that wants to, like, I stand on truth, he's fighting for God's truth in the way that God doesn't. When Jesus came, and he's the biggest truth man ever, right? He's the guy spreading truth. But he did it because he loved people. The guy on the soapbox with the megaphone, he may be saying true. I can't argue. I hate that, by the way. I passed a guy on the street one time with the megaphone out yelling about something or other. And there were some guys next to me that knew that we have the show and I'm a pastor and stuff. And they started asking me questions. And I said, look, I don't know how to say this without feeling embarrassed, but like, I agree with that guy. But man, is he going about it the wrong way. You know what I'm saying? Like, his, what he's saying may be true, but like, he doesn't love you. He's looking at you as someone that he's going to throw information at. Jesus not his information thrower. He loves you. He's speaking truth because he loves you. That we do not, when we don't have that balance, that's when we fail. You have to actually love people instead of just posturing like you love them. Hey, I'm going to say I love you. No, I'm going to tell you the truth because I love you. You don't really love them. If at the root you love God, you will fight for his truth because it's important. And primarily it's important because you love other people. And God loves them and wants them restored to him if they're acting in ways that otherwise separate them or they don't know who he is or understand the world in which he created. And so if you have those in balance, you're fine. In one way or the other, when we're having, say, well, how do I interact with culture? Well, do you love the people in it? Let's start there. If you love God and you love those people and you will fight hard for his truth, you will fight hard for their restoration through his truth, your balance makes itself. It just does. But when we fight for one thing over the other, when we say, I'm going to fight for this truth, and I'm going to say I love you, that's why I have the truth, but like, really, do I love you? What is it, Jesus says, if you love me, obey my commandments. What does it look like to love someone? Is it just, I'm going to insert myself into your door, tell you what you're doing wrong, and leave? Does that really look like love? Does that sound like what love really is? Maybe we don't understand that. Maybe we don't get what it actually is to love another person. In the context of they're not my family and I'm not financially responsible for them.
So I think what they're doing there, they're not loving people, they're selling something. What do you do when you sell something? You create a need, you're a sinner, you're bad, you're terrible, then you provide the solution, buy this product, or in this case, find Jesus. And they're just trying to get another notch in the belt, another sell. Get a little Jesus. All right, you got Jesus, I'm out, I gotta go to the next one. It's kind of they mean well, but they're doing it really poorly, I'd say.
Yeah.
And in an unloving way.
They've turned discipleship into a transaction rather than a relationship.
Right. And rather than a process of discipleship, of learning and following. What is it like? What does it mean to follow Jesus? I'm still figuring this out. I've been doing this for a long time. You spend your whole life trying to figure that out.
Well, and I think that's the whole point of pointing them to God and knowing and understanding God as opposed to knowing a process or knowing here's what I do that's good. Here's what I do that's not good. We've talked about this before, right? But like, I want to know God more. That's why I read the Bible. And when God says, here's how you should act, I trust him. Getting to know him does that. If someone came, actually, I don't know why I got to think of this on the drive home from work, but like, if someone were just to show up to your door and like with an 8-foot tall guy, look like a wrestler, okay? Big old WWF guy, WWE, okay? And they say, hey, this is, Stan. He's sovereign. He's sovereign over everything. And you look at Stan, and the thing is like, we sometimes do that. We say, let me talk to you about God. Everything's in his control. He's sovereign over this thing. Like, if you don't know God, that scares the crap out of you. Because if I believe that someone is in control and can do what he wants to do, and I don't know him and know whether to trust him, that rightfully scares the crap out of me. I don't know Stan from anybody.
Right.
Stan could be a jerk, and he controls everything, and that's scary. And so the problem is like we throw around concepts of like, hey, you should take comfort. There was something that happened in somebody's life that's close to me, and I was thinking, you know, like if they were to ask for help or advice or something, like what kind of thing would I say? And I thought the first thing that I would reach for is God's got this; he's sovereign. But I thought I can't say that to that person. That's freak you out if you don't know God. If you don't know and trust God and know his character, it is no comfort to you to say that he's sovereign. That's where it starts. It starts with knowing God. It starts with understanding God's heart for people. And so like we get way out of balance though, because people would fight rightfully for God's sovereignty. I get that. I understand that. And like the truth of going to someone saying, hey, God is sovereign, you nailed that, buddy. But like you did not communicate who God was in that transaction. And like they completely missed the message. And that's a fail. We want them to get to know God, not just know like aspects of a character that I find important. Jesus is going to come someday and he's going to say, hey, man, you really stuck it to that guy with the truth.
Right.
Solid?
Yeah, I guess.
I doubt it.
That's true. I mean, the guy's going to be like, what's the theoretical guy that we're talking about? Hey, man, how'd that problem go? Well, God's got it. Well, what's he going to do? I'm not sure. Oh, well, that sounds great. Yeah, I don't know what happened there. That's kind of the guy that we're pushing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The guy that just blindly goes, okay, sounds good, I don't care.
You're listening to Live from the Path, and we will be right back with you if you're listening to the podcast. If you're on the 99.3 KTA, we've got to let you go. Have a wonderful week. Thanks for listening to Live from the Path. We'll be right back.
a slow fade. Dane, if you had to, say, like, between those two guys, who would you say that is the most prevalent amongst people who don't know Jesus? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, who do we send forth the most? The guy that's, like, extra lovey or the guy that's extra harsh? Would you say that like, we're represented more on either side of the fence?
I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Because, you know, God put us all here and created us as equals to love one another. He wanted to create unity amongst his people and his children, you know. And he speaks through us in different ways. And it's just our interpretation as to what's right and what's wrong. Or is it just an understanding of this is God's work and I'm going to love this person?
You know, and some people will tell you almost exactly that too. It's like they're straightforward, you know, no holds barred, truth at all costs, truth is that's what the Holy Spirit's got them doing. And like, I think there's times in your life where that could possibly be the truth. I don't know that it's a pattern. I don't know that you were made for the womb, you know, for beating on people like that. Now, granted, you know, I can attest to, there's a couple fellas in my life that's exactly what they had to have, right? They didn't really dig on the hugging and the look in their face and tell them that they're great folks. You know, they kind of needed to be hit with some truth and let that sink in for a while. But then on the other hand, I've tried it where it didn't belong and, you know, they ran away from me and we never talked again.
And I think he wanted to create a little bit of recognition of if you feel like this person isn't connecting with God or connecting with each other, then it's not an entitled right to say something or intervene. But it's a way to get involved with each other. So, you know, there's some things that people do that I don't agree with, but there's probably on the other flip side of the yin and the yang that they don't agree with me, and then we compromise and we come up with a solution. But we can't do it alone. You know, he didn't want us to do things on our own, just as if things get out of control. We say, God, I really need your help here. You know, just I turn all of this over to you and your guidance. I think we need to kind of look towards each other as well, because there's a lot of things we can learn from each other.
All right. I think there's a strong, story through all that on, we're not here to fight. I mean, like there is something about our condition in which, I mean, we are different than what God had otherwise originally intended. But I would agree that he created us for community. He is in community on his own, and so like we are created for that, and we are to benefit from that. And if we look at other people and we treat them like a process, or we treat them like a transaction, or we treat them like something to be won, then our perspective has to change, and that's when our stuff gets in the way of what otherwise God wants to do through us with those people that are around us. All right. I think we settled that. I think that's all good. No one will ever argue about it anymore.
No, it's done.
Pretty much. It's completely done.
Yeah. It's done.
Yeah.
But, I mean, those two articles actually did follow the exact pattern that we've talked about in the past. It's better to stay out of the comments. Jesus gets thrown out the window.
Oh, man.
He gets used in every sentence. But, you know, he is nowhere in those conversations.
Yeah.
Absolutely nowhere.
I did it. I got sucked into the comments when I read that. I took a look at the comments, and those comments are lengthy.
Oh,
yeah. And I'm like, oh, man. And then I realized I flip-flopped 4 times in the comments. I'm sitting there reading through it. I'm just like, yeah, all right. Second comment. Oh, yeah, that makes sense too, man. That's not cool. Third comment. Well, I mean, yeah, that makes plenty of sense. And the fourth comment, I did it again, and I'm like, no, done.
We're done here. You know what I can't say about those comments? I don't really know if this is the right way to go as a blogger or not, but like, you know, you read the comment. I'm like, I kind of agree with that guy. And then he's like, check out my blog spot. Not a chance. As soon as you wrote a comment and then you're like, hey, check out where I write all my good thoughts and ideas. I'm like, you jerk.
Do you think I'm right this time?
Now I don't trust you.
Maybe you can check out me being right some more.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah.
At Handy Dan.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
If you love how right I am, come visit my place.
That's right.
Come visit my place.
I'll meet
There's
you at
plenty of other examples of me being right.
GodsBestFriendSteve.com. All right, Steve, you win back. Seriously. I hate it when people do that. Blah, blah, blah. Check out my blog spot. Who calls it a blog spot anyway? Only people that write blog spots talk like that. I don't write a blog spot. So as soon as you say, check out my blog spot, I'm like, we're not friends. I can tell just by the language that you're using that I don't go to blog spots,
right? I
didn't
know we could use those two words together in the same sentence.
They do it all the time. Check out my blogging area. You know, if I want a guy like, hey, you want to hear more about what I think? Dig on this. Now that's closer.
I was going to say, what would the successful verbiage in your eyes be?
Here's the deal. If your comment wowed me away that I put the Google on you, I'm going
to
go check out
you. Yeah, I should have to find you.
That's right.
So if your comments stand alone for an attraction, that should be a drop.
Who's the guy that you have to climb up the big mountains to get his advice? Some sort of guru man.
The Dalai Lama.
Anyway, people chase the Dalai Lama. He doesn't like advertise on the yellow pages.
Yeah, by the way,
check us out.
Come find me, the Dalai Lama Law Center.
Yeah, he's not even in the white pages.
We do divorces.
Dalai Lama Law.
We do divorces and tax liens. Give me a call.
All right, Mike, you got some. We got some advice.
Dear Life from the Path. Oh boy, my wife and I were discussing our sons-in-law and young men in their 20s and 30s in general. We were wondering where the attitude of any money I earn is mine in a marriage or live-in situation got started. For the first few years of my daughter and her husband Joe's marriage, Joe resented giving her any of the money he earned. My other daughter's husband thinks nothing of spending money on himself and his friends without consulting her. We have seen this attitude reflected in their friends as well. They don't seem to discuss with each other how each is spending their joint income. There seems to be an element of selfishness, too. My wife and I have been married for 40 years, and from the beginning, I have always considered that each of us was what each of us earned was ours, not mine or hers. We always discussed any significant purchases, and I have always believed it was my responsibility to support my family. I realize the current economic situation has made that difficult, but the attitude should still be there, wondering in Washington. Here's the question. Why is everyone not as good as me? I've obviously loved this thing. I'm the best person ever.
Yeah. Here's how I set up my finances. Everyone else is failing.
Yeah.
I've done this right. Why don't those darn kids do it right, too?
Have the wives? Doesn't it appear that the wives have complained a whole lot?
I was going to say, Dad's got an awful lot of information here. Right from his two daughters.
But he knows somehow, so maybe there has been some conversations that...
He's a snooper.
That could be.
Hey, are you guys sharing your finances like I thought?
Yeah, like I would do it, because I'm the example around here. God's best friend, Steve.
Check out my blog spot.
I mean, there's got to be communication in marriage. You've got to, you know, it's pretty tough to have a healthy marriage without at least having the conversation where money's going. And it, I don't know. I guess I've always looked at everything as ours too. But we also have stuff that we each do independently. I don't call her every time. You know, I buy a motorcycle. That's a bad example. I don't call her every time.
Don't call her every time.
Okay,
I
need to sell my motorcycle. but mostly, usually when I do big purchases, we'll have a conversation. And I mean, I don't even buy shoes. Well, yeah, never mind.
Dan,
I have nothing good to add here.
I'm glad you can financially differentiate between I bought a Kit Kat earlier and I bought a motorcycle.
I only did that once and surprised her.
Good, good. I'm with Dan. Obviously, this is from a standpoint of I've been married for a long time, but when I do get married, it'll be our money. It won't be from a standpoint of I need to check in with you on every single purchase and you need to check in with me on every single purchase. I don't think that's it at all. I just want to be open and honest about where our money's going and what we're doing to save and what we're doing to spend that money and make sure that we're being responsible with that. Make sure we're taking care of what...
You're making those conversations sound way easier than they actually go.
I'm not saying they're going to be easy, but they need to happen.
Yeah. It's the downfall of most marriages.
I get that.
Cash money, how they're going to handle their money.
That's why you have to build that foundation.
It's the talking about it that caused the divorce. If no one would talk about it, they were just going on in ignorance.
It'll be heavy.
As soon as the conversation opens, then the floodgates are there, and then it's divorce time. It's a disaster.
I feel like just because I know myself well enough is that I'm going to have those conversations.
Yeah.
Because if I'm, you know, 40 years old and married and I have kids and things like that, I don't really want to go buy my Chewbacca suit that I really want to buy and then have to explain that to my wife away. I think I should just...
You got to find the right woman.
Yeah.
Dude, I totally want a Chewbacca suit.
Yeah, I put that on a list and say, hey, look, babe, before we move any further, I need to talk about this Chewbacca suit.
Sweetums. here's the next step on the docket. At some point in time, your husband is going to own a Chewbacca suit. What are your thoughts on
that? Am I the man?
Am I the man for you? I'm going to put that on a dating site. Yeah.
Here's what I do, be honest with you. I fight about money when we're already fighting about something else.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. If there's already an argument on the table and I'm like, let's talk about finances. Because I don't want to ruin a good streak by talking about money. It's terrible. It never goes well. And so usually I'll wait till something else has failed, like I didn't clean the place up, and I'll be like, and let's talk about money. That's the way I do it.
Now that we're on the subject of my failures.
As long as we're
going to
fight, we might as well do it all right now.
Here's the deal. There's people that function having separate bank accounts. And I don't, it's not inherently a problem. I think the only time that it becomes a problem is if you are doing it simply to because you can't talk about it, right? Like if you're not able to have the discussion, so you're like, well, he does. Even have joint accounts and handle your own money, there had to have been some sort of agreement. Somebody's paying the mortgage. Somebody's doing, like, I've heard people do where, like, so-and-so pays the mortgage, so-and-so takes care of the power bill. And, like, even that represents, hey, we know we have shared expenses. You know, we've got them divvied out. Things are fine. That's a level of communication. That's no problem, right? If you got someone who completely dominates the finances, that's a problem because there's, I mean, you have a trust issues unless someone's like way untrustworthy. And frankly, that's the best move for them.
Yeah. That's the way we roll.
Yeah. So
whatever runs the cash.
Don't, I mean, I suppose whatever you do is fine. Just like make sure that it represents a healthy relationship that however you're doing it, it's healthy and that you don't have somebody having to dominate it one way or the other or drag somewhere out. Like if someone can't handle their money, and that will be a marital problem. It's a Mike's right. It's a prime cause of divorce is marital problems is not handling money correctly. So like you've got to get that nailed out. But you just be open and communicate about it.
Yeah, Dane, 2 cents.
Well, I don't think we should try to mold everyone into one bucket or another. You know, to each his own. You know, I'm not in a relationship with marriage or anything like that. But I think there are character virtues that I look for that say that you know I don't necessarily have a playbook. Or going to follow someone else's, but if I'm looking for someone that I'm going to share money with, then that's what I'm going to do. But I'm not going to get involved with someone who is completely reliant or dependent on me if that's not what I want.
Yeah. Now, would you, let's say you find a fine woman and things are going pretty well. You're about, 8 months in, and she says, look here, Dane, at some point in my 40s, I'm going to buy a full Chewbacca suit without asking your permission to begin with. Is this going to be all right?
I might even put it on credit.
Yeah.
She's going to make payments on her.
Yeah.
It's only like $1,100.
But she's telling you ahead of time.
You know that.
Seriously. Right. And this gets into this other dichotomy of, okay, well, you love someone enough, then you make sacrifices or you mold with that person and you grow, you know. There's arguments on both sides. So I don't have a good answer to that question.
Yeah, that was the weakest answer I've ever heard, in fact. Yes or no on the Chewbacca suit, man?
No.
No.
You heard it here.
Yeah. Actually,
take that, single ladies.
So, actually, while Dane was talking, I thought of the perfect answer. So, if this woman comes up to me and says, I'm going to do this without telling you, I said, babe, no, it's not going to happen that way. I will buy you that Chewbacca suit.
Ooh.
Because I love you. That's the answer.
Whoa.
That's the answer.
Whoa.
That's when I'm going to know that she's my special
that's
lady.
Right, that's her.
When I'm like, all right. I'm going to use Sweetums again. Sweetums.
I happen to have it in my trunk, my ear.
I'm going to be buying a Chewbacca suit very soon, and I'm not really asking your permission. I'm just giving you the knowledge of the situation happening. And she goes, guess what? I got it.
I have it already.
I'll be like, guess what? Let's get married.
I'm going to put a ring on it. That's right. Yeah.
I'm going to put a ring on it. Bring me that Chewbacca finger. I'm going to put a ring on it.
What's the secular advice?
Secular says, you have raised an interesting subject. There's a difference between living together and being married because of our legal system. Because people who cohabitate without benefit of marriage are considered individuals in the eyes of the law, it is probably prudent to keep their financial affairs separate. However, each person should contribute to the expenses they share. In a marriage, the situation is different. The law assumes that the man and the wife are one unit. This is the mindset you adopted when you and your wife were married. There's a tendency among young couples, not only because of the high divorce rate, but also what they have been exposed to in the media from the time they were born, to view marriage as something that might not last. This is also a sense of entitlement among many, not all, that makes them centered on themselves. We have become a society in which disposability has spread from material possessions to relationships. I would love to hear what my readers, particularly younger readers, think about this.
Done.
Yeah. Done.
Yeah. You guys aren't my younger readers.
Yeah. Here's the deal. As far as Dane's right about it, there's not one formula that works for all. But if you want to save yourself a lot of headache in your marriage, you guys better be open about money as soon as you start dating. I mean, I'm talking 3 dates in, you better start talking about it. Because, it's a big deal. It's a very big deal. Ready?
Yeah.
Dear Life from the Path, we are fortunate to have great friends and relatives who invite us to their homes for parties, celebrations, overnight stays, etc. The problem is their houses are cluttered and dirty.
Oh, sorry. Never mind.
We see spilled food in the refrigerator. Oh, no. Food in the fridge. In any manner. Showers caked with grime and years of stain on the upholstery. Money and time are not issues for these folks. If this was a hotel or restaurant, we would leave immediately. My husband and I have been unnerved by the conditions in these houses. We like to spend time with these people and don't wish to offend. Subtle hints don't help. We try our best to enjoy their company, ignore the rest, but it can be difficult. What can we do? Neat in New York.
That's really simple, yeah.
Yeah, I have an idea.
You could say, hey, that's okay, we'll stay in a motel.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Why?
No, we just like to. It's our little vacation. It's our getaway.
No.
I do it all the
now,
time.
No, I wanted you to stay with us, though.
I rarely spend.
We got the guest room clean. People, there's no reason for you to spend your own money on hotel room.
We want to. My wife already booked the appointment.
Why don't you
want to
stay at my
hotel
place?
Without me?
But why don't you want to stay at my place, Dad?
It's dirty.
There it is.
You stink.
There it is.
There was the simple solution.
You're a pig.
Here's the deal.
Third round of why, and Dan goes, it's dirty, and then walks away.
If I am comfortable enough to stay at your place as an option, right? Like, we're friends, and I would say, hey, look, man, I would stay here, but your shower is grimy, and someone seems to be dumping food all over your refrigerator. And that's generally not a, that's not a problem for you. That's cool, but that grosses me out, dude. We're staying in a hotel.
This is
get a friend. Talk to them appropriately.
Here's the thing is they make it sound serial amongst all their friends. Like, how many sets of friends are they hanging out with? Like, they're seeking out people who are dirty and grimy.
Yeah. What kind of dirty friends?
What kind of guy of any age, like a married couples, now we're talking, I mean, they're saying they're staying at married couples' houses. So this is a man that has been under the thumb of a woman that's obviously not going to let him get away with his bachelor type ways, takes the pickles, dumps them in the fridge and goes, not my problem. And then shuts the fridge.
Get some electrolytes, fridge.
I mean, you know that's going to leak down to the carrot drawer and then you got more problems.
Okay, so so my friends, if I go over to the house, I know that bedroom's going to be funky. Like, I know that. And I fully expect that, and I'm okay with it. But, I mean, these married couples, I think if they're your friends and family, it's okay to say that. You're not going to hurt, well, if you do to hurt their feelings, maybe it's a good thing. But just straight up tell them, no, I'm not staying at your house. Here's the situation. If I'm being honest and caring about you, your place is nasty.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, dude, I don't know what's growing in your fridge. But it needs to be taken care of. And that shower, I'm pretty sure I've seen Petri dishes cleaner. Seriously, clean it up.
Yep. You say, hey, man, does James Brown live here? Because that's funky.
That is funky. We want the funk. No, we don't. No, we don't.
Yeah. Here's the deal. People's tendency, you know, Abby Secular was just talking about the problems from the time before, like on the last question. The problem with most of society is just their lack of being honest. Like, and maybe that's the brutal honesty that Matt Walsh was trying to put forth.
Yeah.
But, like, there comes a time just to tell somebody the truth. Unlike Dan, who'd rather beat around the bushes for three rounds before I got a... Before you hurt my feelings, you lied to me twice. That hurts my feelings more. You say, hey, listen, your place is not designed for us because we're clean people. The Hudsons are a clean people. Look at us.
I have the perfect situation. Here's what you do. You go and you write a message in the grime, all right? This place is dirty. And then go to the fridge and write the rest of it. We're not staying here.
Wait. Is it wrong to clean it on the sly?
I've done that. It offends them.
That's weird, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not cleaning up your place because that means I know that you know that I know this place is nasty.
Yeah, but you know, I don't care how they live. I just don't care. It's just, I'm just gonna spend the night in a motel. I mean, I just.
I don't know why you don't want to stay with me.
You know, to chime in, is it the people that choose to live the lifestyle they want, or is it the couple that continue to put themselves in that situation that just want to be liked, that don't have the courage to just stand up for what they believe in and find friends that have virtues that they're looking for?
Well, I mean, at that thing, that their whole existence is a house of cards. Like, you've made friends to be liked. Like, you've acted in such a way to be liked with people that you legitimately don't like. Because you don't have anything in common. Like, if that clean house...
I don't think I have to... Like, I know people that keep a cleaner house than I do, and I'm like, we don't get along, boys, because your level of cleanliness is not equivalent to mine.
Hey, man, well, this place is way too clean.
No, that's agreed, but if you've... I mean, let's say you've bent this one area. Like, if you have a tendency to bend on every single subject, then you legitimately don't even like them.
No, yeah, that's true.
And so, like, you've just made a... You've put someone on a postcard as your buddy. You bought the picture frame at Kmart and said, that's my aunt. That's what you've done. You don't have any real friends. You have like 10 versions of you that like when it comes down to it, you don't like any of them. The place is dirty. I'd say, look, it's stank nasty here. I'm not coming over.
Hey, Jimmy, clean your shower.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no more room for me to deposit dirt here. There's no more room.
Yeah, let me put this in perspective. I would rather go sleep in a bed that someone else slept in last night that I don't know them. Then stay at your place.
That's true.
I don't think I'd have. I mean, if it's a friend that I'm willing to stay with, even in concept, I feel like I should be close enough to say, hey, we're not staying here. Why not? Well, I don't know. It's a little gross in there, man.
Oh, man.
We'll take the hotel.
Well, here, listen to this. Here's Secular's advice. When you go to visit, stay in a nearby hotel or motel. If you know food will be served, fortify yourself beforehand and eat as little as possible without being rude. If you're afraid you might soil your clothing sitting on their furniture, leave anything that isn't washable at home. Basically, put on your James Bond type behavior and try to spy your way through the whole evening.
What are you going to show up in sweatpants and a flak jacket eating a donut?
I'm just here to soak up the air conditioning. Oh.
Exactly. We're eating? I had no idea we're eating. Do you mind if I sit on this garbage bag I happen to have on me? Anyway, just spraying some air freshener.
Hey, I bought you 9 candles.
My doctor said I got to wear gloves at all times. That's weird, right?
Why are you wearing those sweatpants? Just love to be comfy. I'm not going to sit on your furniture, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen this new product, Scotch Guard? Works like a champ.
Working for a new company. Check it out.
Do you have any burlap? Anyway.
There is no way to be good at this. You know what I'm saying?
Just tell the
truth.
How
many lies do you want to tell? Your place is nasty. We're going out.
Why are you sitting on the floor? I'm respecting your stuff.
Or I was thinking about becoming Buddhist, and you got to practice the posture.
Right, exactly. I do day yoga.
Here we go. Last one. Dear Life from the Path. My son John and daughter-in-law Bree recently announced their second pregnancy via email and asked that we keep the news in the immediate family for now. I was so happy and excited that I notified my sister. She is my best friend and lives in another state. As it turns out, my sister shared the news with her daughter, who is good friends with Bree. My niece then texted congratulations to her. At the end of the day, I received a nasty, dramatic phone call from Bree. She was furious that I had revealed her secret. My heart sank. It wasn't my intention to hurt her in any way. I apologize profusely, but now I'm afraid that this may have solidified the wedge between us because our relationship was never very close to begin with. I realize I was wrong and apologize. What more can I do to make this joyful occasion that it should be? Yeah, you learn to keep your mouth shut, Flappy. She said don't freaking tell anybody.
You deal with the consequences of your action.
Never mess with a pregnant woman.
Right, you just said sorry for something you completely screwed up. Guess what? You still screwed it up.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Sorry is not something that means, oh, are we completely good now with no repercussions for my actions? Sorry.
This is not somebody who's looking at this accurately. She sent me a nasty, dramatic email. What she did is it sent me 2 pages of truth, mama. You know what I'm saying? You took the information after you were told to shut up. You told people.
You did exactly what I told you not to do.
You couldn't be any more wrong in this situation. And she's upset at me. How can I fix this situation? You better stay out of it. That's what you better do. Yeah. You better just sit at your couch and be quiet. Don't talk to this woman no more. This was totally your fault.
She sent me the dictionary definition of privacy. I guess I don't get that one.
It was just a mistake. I accidentally blabbed a huge secret that they told me to be quiet about, said Vladimir Putin. I mean, seriously, be quiet.
Well, that'd be my first question is, why was your relationship on the rocks to begin with? Was it because you can't keep your mouth shut? You
know? Really. It might be a trending pattern.
Now, wait a minute. If that's the case, then Bree was kind of foolish.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, never spread it. Don't give
don't
information to gossips.
Don't tell someone ain't going
to
keep their mouth shut.
Yeah. Hey, you've never been trustworthy in the past. Here's a huge secret. Make sure you keep that quiet, though.
It's really important.
Just putting the feelers out, seeing if I might be able to trust you. Here's that. Yeah, incidentally, that is not a good way to see if you could trust somebody again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I haven't been able to trust you in the past, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you one more shot with something life-changing. Cool? Cool.
By the way, I'm a fugitive from Honduras.
Exactly.
Don't tell anybody.
I'm wanted in 14 countries. Don't tell anybody, though. I couldn't keep the kitchen or the chicken recipe secret, but go ahead and keep this one in.
That's right. I told you to tell no one how I make them cinnamon rolls.
So is the recommendation that she not make any grand gestures? She just, like, apologize and let it go.
Leave this alone, and then Bree will come to you if she wants to sell.
Which there's nothing anybody can do. If the damage has been done, they burned the house down.
This is going to be, a 10-year fix. This ain't going to happen next year where she's like, all is forgotten.
Next Christmas. You remember that one time someday. You told people that I was pregnant before I got a chance to?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do. I remember that time.
So does your sister.
And her daughter, coincidentally.
It'll be graduation day. Did they ever tell you the time? It's
like, yeah, never trustworthy again. You've made a mistake that you can't get out of. And I think that's fair. Okay, here we go. Secular says, Now you pay the penalty for leaking the news and gracefully accept that you will be relegated to the second tier when it comes to announcements from your son and daughter-in-law. Perhaps you could eventually get back in their good graces by respecting their wishes in the future.
You've been listening to Live from the Path. Make sure you catch us during the week. Go to livefromthepath.org. You can sign up for the podcast. Check out past clips from the show, including musical performances by the likes of Chandler Knudsen, Jess Anderson, whose brand new album came out this week.
Yeah.
You can get the album is called Hole. You can go to jessanderson.com, pick that up. And thanks for listening to Live from the Path. We'll see you next week.